gotta put a best of on Drew. We're gonna lose every station we have.
Oh, thing sucks!
Who is your daddy, and what does he do?
End of day. The freedom of speech is being taken away.
What do you think happens to someone after they die?
Do
you believe in heaven?
I never did. But the whole idea of afterlife.
End of days. The judgment day. The end of the world.
If you don't
believe in
people, you're uninformed.
And welcome to a brand new life, to a brand new day, all the way from the wastelands of California. My name is Michael, and I'm a mere figment of your imagination. I look forward to once again serve you those sounds of salvation. First time listeners, turn on, tune in, and drop out. This is a very different kind of show, a place where you don't feel so alone. Let us chase away the light no matter what you at home choose to believe. I do admire you for your curiosity. Live and direct right now on the TuneIn Radio app. Search End of Days and you'll find the 24/7 network, End of Days. Catch the podcast version of the program. Go to michaeldeacon.com. Now tonight will be a very special program. Paul Hellier is my guest tonight. He is one of Canada's best known and most controversial politicians. He is an engineer, writer, and a political commentator who has had a long and varied career. He is the longest serving current member of the Privy Council of Canada. My goodness. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for allowing me into your hearts and into your minds. Here we are again on a night like this. Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you kindly to all the souls listening in. Like clockwork, strange packages have been sent out to various political figures. The political spectrum now slowly is becoming reminiscent of the UK. Politics is now almost the new religion. Do you agree with that? Let me know tonight. Stay safe wherever you are out there on this island earth. Now, without further ado, let's bring in Paul. I believe he is patiently waiting. Paul, are you there?
I am here, yes.
Amazing. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, thank you, for a young fellow.
My goodness. And, of course, welcome back to the program, Paul. And thank you so much for sharing your time with myself and all the listeners out there. I really do appreciate that.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Amazing. Now, as a preamble, I wanted to just go through your background briefly. I also wanted to discuss society and politics and, of course, UFOs. All these things go hand in hand. And I thought, who else better to talk to them with then none other than Mr. Paul Hellier?
Well, we can cover those subjects and then maybe some of the more critical ones that they later on.
Agreed. So, Paul, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself?
Well, I was raised on a farm about 90 miles west of Toronto, where my father pioneered the ginseng business in Canada. I learned a lot of things on the farm, little entrepreneurship. I went to California after high school to study aeronautics, came back and worked in the industry for a while, spent two years in the armed forces, one in the Air Force and one in the Army, and went to university. I got married and went to university and decided that when I asked my professors why we had recessions and depressions, that I didn't like their answers because in effect, they just said, well, we've always had them, so they're going to be part of the system, or they were part of the system. And I disagreed very strongly then, and that was the driving motive for me to get into politics at such a young age. I graduated from university in May and got elected in June 1949, against all possible odds. The odds at the local pub the day I got elected were 15-1 against me. But somehow we made it, and then about 8 years later, I was named by Mr. Saint Laurent, Louis S. Saint Laurent, who was the prime minister at that time, as the first Liberal cabinet minister in the history of the City of Toronto, who had actually been elected in the City of Toronto. There had been a couple who had come in after and been in the Yorks, but none who had been part of the Toronto scene and got elected. And then so I was defeated, of course, in the election of 1957, as were most of my colleagues here in the city. And we were all wiped out in 1958. It was a by-election called that year because the chap living in the riding right next door was watching a baseball game, a World Series baseball game, and dropped dead from a heart attack. And so my friends and enemies alike asked me to move over and run in Trinity, which I did, and that was my riding for the rest of my parliamentary career, which lasted in total, I think, about 23 and a half years.
And by the way, Paul, going back to your adolescence and your upbringing, did your parents raise you in any sort of religious upbringing?
My parents were very people of faith, yes. They were staunch Baptists, and we used to go to Sunday school or church four times each Sunday.
Four times? Oh, my goodness.
There was sort of a two-part system for the minister there, and we attended Villanova Baptist Church in the morning and then a little Sunday school, and there was Sunday school before that, and then the Sunday school in the Townsend Center, which was closer to where I was raised, in the afternoon, and then church at one or the other in the evening, because they rotated, they went back and forth every second week. So it was they were people of faith, and but more important, they practiced their faith. They were compassionate people. The father treated his employees more as friends than as employees, and always helped to look after them in many ways. And mother was a person who was very active in the community too. So she was great and looked after me because I was kind of a sickly kid.
Oh, okay.
But I survived it all, and here we are.
Amazing. And of course, you are the author of the book, The Money Mafia, A World in Crisis. And your latest book is Hope Restored.
Right.
Which is amazing. I really did enjoy that book. And of course, one of the things you immediately...
Have you read Hope Restored?
Yeah. Well, not the whole thing, but I did read a good portion of it. And one of the things that you mention in your book immediately right in the description is that humanity is at a tipping point. And you know, Paul, I believe you are correct. And I've been saying this a lot on my program ever since 9/11. And it really doesn't matter what side in terms of the conspiracy angles. Ever since 9/11, the American Foundation, in my opinion, has been turned upside down.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you're quite right to use that term, tipping point. That's where we are. We can either start disarming, cut defense expenditures drastically, and start using that money, the savings, to install zero-point engines into our cars and trucks and tractors and airplanes and homes, and keep the planet from total destruction through climate change, and to start bringing a little justice into the world so that the young people all have access to a certain amount of education and have food to eat and water to drink and a roof over their head and a few clothes to wear and a little opportunity to show what they can do. And so justice has been one of the key words. I guess you can relate that to love if you want to, because we're advised to love people, and not in the sense of passionate love, but to what the Greeks called agape love, which was to understand where people are coming from and to accept them as they are, and to take into account how they were raised and what their culture is and so on. So these are the things that could be done if we change dramatically, which we have to do, because you've seen this. I'm sure you've seen the clock, the atomic clock it shows that we're just so far away from 12 o'clock, as they call it.
The doomsday clock.
Doomsday clock. You've got it.
Oh, yeah. That was I believe Lawrence Krauss was talking to me about that off air, and I should have brought that on air, but my goodness, it totally slipped my mind. But go ahead. Sorry.
Well, we're just, I can't remember now, a couple of minutes from 12 o'clock, which is sort of doomsday, and probably a minute sooner now, after the United States has renounced the atomic weapons treaty with Russia. And we're going the wrong way, because there's been such a change in the effectiveness of weapons over the years. There was a time when people battled it out with clubs and so on, and then swords and spears, and then musket-loaded guns, and then automatic guns, and then finally the last World War, the Second World War, ended with atomic weapons, which are just so disastrous that to even have them around is a temptation to use them. And that could happen, because there are some psychotic generals in the United States Armed Forces who believe that they have now established the kind of defensive mechanisms that they could actually launch a war against Russia and get away with what they call acceptable casualties. And this is, it's absolute madness. You know, they're right off their you-know-what. And I wish, but they're subject to mind control. And that's the problem, because they begin to believe this stuff. They're told it from somebody, and they begin to believe it, and they think they could get away with it, when in fact they can't. So we have to stop doing that and start saving the planet before it's too late. It's really up to us, because we're writing our own history.
And I agree with you on that, Paul, 100%. But I must say this. We could only lead the horse to the water, but it is the horse that must drink that water. And that's the issue we have here in my country, in this great nation. There's so many people that definitely are mind controlled and brainwashed. I truly believe 60% to maybe even 75, maybe even 80% of the population, the mainstream, the masses, they are completely oblivious to what's going on around them, and they only focus on the mainstream narrative, and they really don't have any thoughts or opinions of their own. And that's,
well, I couldn't agree with you more, because
yes,
the things that I've learned in the last 13 years since I first went public on the question of UFOs and said that they were real, and had the dubious distinction of being the first person of cabinet rank in the what was then the G8 group of countries to say that unequivocally. And I've learned so much since that it's just amazing. And I would say, as of today, that there are probably not more than 1 or 2% of people that I bump into who have any what you would call working knowledge of what's going on in the world. And this is a tragedy, because they're just living in a fairyland. I can understand they have to, you know, pay their bills and pay the mortgage and do that sort of thing. But they're going to have to do a lot more than that if they want to survive as a species. Because if we keep those atomic weapons around, eventually somebody's going to use them. And if they do, it's likely to escalate to the point where the human species is pretty well, if not totally, wiped out. It doesn't need to happen, but it certainly could happen. And it's happened, I think, once before on the Earth, and it's happened on Mars, for example, and they got an atomic war with a neighboring planet, so they could no longer live on the surface of the planet, but because it had been beautiful like ours, and it became uninhabitable on the surface, and this is what would be likely to happen here if we were to have this doomsday that we're talking about. But I think it might help if we go back and sort of look at a little bit of the history of the last 70 years.
Right.
because to see if we can fill people in a little bit. And in 1940, even before the Second World War was over, the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States came to the conclusion that Hitler was going to lose and that they should start thinking about an even greater territory for their empire for the future. And they started working on it, and they've never turned their backs on it. But they weren't the only ones that were thinking ahead. The Nazis, after the Americans and the Russians both came in on the side of the Allies, much to their dismay, they realized that they were going to be defeated. And so sometime before they surrendered, and this was all planned out in advance, they started to establish another headquarters in Antarctica. And they sent many of their best scientists and engineers down there and all the support staff and so on to establish what we would have called, in other cases during World War II, a government in waiting. And that is their the headquarters that they decided would be something that could keep operating while they went underground and looked for better times to come. Well, this was understood by the Allies, and the United States sent a task force to Antarctica, who was headed by Admiral Byrd. And I forget exactly how many ships there are, but if you want to know, you can Google it and under Operation High Jump, and it will tell you the number of ships. And Admiral Byrd found to his dismay that instead of being able to take over the place, that he was driven back by a couple of flying saucers, or I don't know exactly how many. And the only question in my mind is whether they were German saucers, which one of my colleagues believes, or if they were reptilian saucers from the one species that is often talked about, or part of that species, which is talked about by being very aggressive and not really friendly like most of the other species. Nearly all of the species are benign, but there's a branch of the reptilians which is not. And it could easily have been their flying saucers, because they have been living on under the earth, really, of the huge area on the west side of the Pacific Ocean for thousands of years, and they'd been around, and they felt that they kind of owned the place. And so they were working with the Germans during World War II, partly responsible for Hitler's ascendancy. And then probably we're still working with them after the war. Well, then Admiral Byrd was dismayed and came back with his tail between his legs, so to speak, and wanted to nuke the Antarctican base. But something had happened in the meantime. Well, I should say about Operation High Jump that when you Google it, you don't get the truth. And this is in my book, that they put in a few of the facts in the middle, how many ships were involved and so on. But they don't give the reason for Operation High Jump.
By the way, I think there was 13 ships.
13 ships, eh? Well, that the total, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't give the result. They don't give the reason for the whole thing. And this was an indication that by then, the United States shadow government, as it was called, the alternative government, which we hear so much about, and was been called many things, the military-industrial complex, the military-industrial intelligence complex, and so on, was sufficiently in control that they did not admit that this was a problem, because probably they were sympathetic to what was going on in Antarctica. And as far as I know, in my second last book, I asked the question of the Americans, is the base still there? Of course, no response. And no one has ever answered that question. But in the meantime, I'm sure you are just as aware of this one, there was another operation called Paperclip. And at the end of World War II, the United States Armed Forces decided to recruit a raft of Nazi scientists to come and help them in the Cold War against the Russians. And President Truman gave his okay to that on the basis that they not bring in any people who had been active Nazis. But, of course, the armed forces paid no attention, and they just brought in whoever they wanted. And a lot of them were very active members of the Nazi Party. And so they were given new identities, new CVs, new names, and then appointed to important positions, both civil and military, in the United States. And I'm of the opinion that by the time General Eisenhower realized that somebody had moved the back engineering of the saucer that crashed in Roswell. There were two crashes in Roswell, but the one saucer was more or less intact, and they started to back engineer it. And they moved the operation to the western United States in some of the areas that we know as Area 51 and S4. And that's where they were working on this, and General Eisenhower wanted to know what they were doing out there, and they wouldn't tell him. And he was the President of the United States, which tells you something. And so he finally threatened to send in the army from Colorado, and they let him send in, I think, three or four of his friends of the CIA, and they reported, of course, that they were working on back engineering the saucer from Roswell. But that is, ever since then, I don't think there has ever been a president of the United States, and obviously Eisenhower himself was not totally in the loop, who has been totally in the loop as to what's been going on out there. I think they're given briefings, they're told some of the things, and I'm told by Grant Cameron, one of the best ufologists, that Obama landed at Nellis Air Force Base, but none of the presidents has ever been allowed to go around and inspect what's happening out there in what are kind of sort of laughingly called black operations. They're special projects, is their real name, but they're called black ops, as right. You know. And so what has been going on is incredible, and there was a scientist who was working out there, Michael Wolff, that was his pseudonym, but he had top security clearance and had worked in Area S4 and knew exactly what was going on. And he reported in a radio broadcast years and years ago a couple of things. He said that the underground works there were about the size of Rhode Island and getting bigger all the time. Can you imagine? And then there are people who say that there's another one a few miles away that is more or less comparable. So these are big things, and for all of these 70 years, the best scientists, and many of the best scientists and engineers in the world have been working on space travel and the development of weapons, which are just so awful you can't even sort of contemplate them. So you wind up today with a control of the United States, which has been the control for years of what a lot of people call the cabal. And I don't know, do you want me to just run through what the cabal is?
Sure, we could talk about that. And I have a lot to say about that all ties together, but yes, go ahead.
The cabal, which is an amorphous group, and has sort of just come together because of common interests over the years. It comprises the Bavarian Illuminati and the members of the Thule Society, but then the next order of business is what I call the Three Sisters. They're the Bilderbergers and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission. And those three organizations have been working very closely with the Cabal. They're very important. We're right at the top of it, really, in more ways than one. And then if you break that down a little bit, the banking cartel is the apex, but most of the bankers are members of the Bilderbergers. And then the oil cartel, which is next to the banking cartel, and it's controlled too pretty well by the banking cartel, because the banks have stocks in oil companies and they provide them with credit and so on. And the oil companies control the technology that Dr. Wolf said existed way back in the 1960s. He said that the United States, in conjunction with one of the alien species, had developed both cold fusion and zero-point energy. So for all of these years, instead of using that technology to save the planet and to prevent the kind of storms that we're seeing now in various parts of the world, whether it's off the Florida coast or whether it's Mexico or on the Pacific Rim, or they're just happening in so many places, and the damage is so great. And this is just the beginning, because the forecast, there's so many of them, it's hard to keep up with them. There was one put out recently that said we had 12 years to do something about it. The United States has another forecast, which is that by the end of the century, the planet won't be worth saving, and consequently, there's no sense trying to do anything about it. This defeatist attitude just bugs me terribly, because there is still something that can be done, and I'll give you my three-minute proposal, which is in at least two of my latest books.
Right.
And that is to take and it's based on my experience in World War II, that in World War II, we took all of the automobile manufacturing plants and all the refrigerator manufacturing plants and all the stove manufacturing plants and converted them into arms factories. And that allowed us to ultimately win the war, or so we thought. And we have to do the same thing in reverse now. We have to take all of these plants that are providing the Saudis with weapons and the Americans with weapons and ISIS with weapons and the military-industrial complex and its counterparts in Russia and in France and England, and convert them into plants to build zero-point energy engines or motors, which are very small boxes that can produce all of the electricity you need for a car or a tractor or an airplane or a ship or a house. And, of course, in the process, you get rid of all those wires that come down when you have an ice storm, and in some parts of the country anyway. And you get independence, but you get clean energy, and the global warming would stop eventually, instead of going up 4 degrees by the end of the century, which is the projection of the U.S. Study, the first one that I mentioned.
Yeah.
So this is the cure, and this is what has to be done. But you put your finger on it earlier. Where's the political will to do the things that have to be done?
Correct. And I actually have heard you talk about this, the global situation in 2018. You compare it to the global situation in 1939, with one critical exception. Do you recall that?
Yes, I do.
Oh my! I think you're pretty much right about that assessment.
I'm afraid so.
Yeah, I think you are, my friend.
That's my worst fear, is that the cabal, which has been in charge of the United States, the president, neither the president nor the Congress has, in 2013, Steve Bassett had a show he put on there that I was part of. 40 witnesses with 6 former parliament congressional people, and not one of them was aware that UFOs were real when we started. Not one. And not one of them knew that they had been financing this stuff for decades, and that they themselves had been guilty of breaking the law by letting money be spent on these arms when there had been no congressional supervision. So this deeply ingrained, this Pollyanna approach to life, and the reality is that I am sure, and I haven't mentioned this yet, but Alan Dulles, who was inclined to be supportive of the Nazis, and so was his brother John Foster Dulles, and Alan Dulles ultimately became head of the CIA. And when he and his brother were in office, those offices, his brother was Secretary of State, they brought in thousands more Nazis to reinforce the ones that were already there. And, of course, there were a lot of natural American Nazis in the 1930s, too. So now you have them starting to come out of the woodwork. And would you believe there was an article, something in one of the Canadian papers today that I saw, that some Canadian Nazis had joined the auxiliary armed forces in order to get training free. And this is happening all over the world. And you have these cells that have been lying dormant beginning to pop up here and there. And what they have in mind, of course, is what they have been calling a new world order. When Bush Sr., president, came out with it, it sounded like, you know, here, three cheers, we're going to have a new world order, and everything's going to be rosy. Well, that's the way it sounded, but the reality is that they're talking about a world government, which is a fascist government, probably a Nazi government, and of, by, and for them, for their benefit. And they have plans to take over most of the world, and maybe ultimately the whole world. And they've been working towards this for years, and they've done all sorts of things that are really sort of beyond the pale.
Pretty evil.
Yeah. Well, that you're slightly an understatement there, just a little. Some of it is so evil, I can't even describe it.
Of course, you're referring. A motorcycle just passed by there. Wow, very loud. You were referring to Bush Sr., his speech back on September 11th, 91.
Yeah, I think that's the one that where he said, announce this
interesting
great
date,
new
right?
World. But also in my latest book, and I called it Hope Restored because that's conditional. And, It can be restored, but only if millions, and I mean millions of Americans, decided to exercise their voting power to make sure that something was done. And I've listed seven things there that I think are fundamental. And the first one is to get rid of the CIA completely, totally. There's no way that it can be reformed. It is the sort of, I call it evil central.
Right.
And that's the name it should have emblazoned on its front. And they have done things that, you know, we would accuse the Russians of doing and everyone else of doing, but they have done the same and worse and continue to do it. And I think it was, Dr. The well-known ufologist, the guy that really got things going, knows his name as well as my own, but it doesn't come right at the moment.
It's okay. And I agree with you, though, about the CIA. It would be good to sort of cleanse this sort of a faction that we do have. The CIA has been responsible for so many bad things, even going back to the drugs for guns trade in Central America and the war on drugs. We kind of already know that it's been a bit of a sham.
Well, Stephen Greer was the name I was looking for.
Oh, Stephen Greer. Okay.
In his latest book, I think, said on good authority that the CIA has a squadron of anti-gravity ships that go every night, well, I shouldn't say every night, early morning, like, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock. They fly to the Middle East loaded with guns and drugs that they sell for cash in order to take that cash and push it into the black operations. And this, I think, is just indicative. They are, by all accounts, the biggest, one of the biggest, if not the biggest drug dealer in the United States.
I have to agree with you on that one, no doubt. And to further tag to that, it's remarkable that not many people bring up Bill Clinton and his involvement and Bush's involvement as well. They are pretty much good friends, and as they say, birds of a feather flock together. Bill definitely had his fun with cocaine, especially out there with his knowledge of what was going on in Mena, Arkansas, something that many people don't really talk about anymore. And, of course, I won't forget that sort of thing. That's an amazing thing when you pardon your brother, Roger.
Yeah. And I think the irony is that the United States would be having a war on drugs at the same time that one of the most powerful institutions in the United States was the biggest drug runner. And I actually talked to a retired Air Force officer who had flown F-104 as a guard for a huge plane load of drugs that was being brought in from Asia. So as far as I'm concerned, you can't redeem it, so you've got to disband it. And I mentioned that in the chapter 25 of my book. And then the National Security Agency.
Oh, by the way, Paul, I'm sorry to pause you there, but since we were talking about drugs just now, one of the things that is currently going on in your country is the legalization of marijuana for recreational use.
Yeah.
Where exactly do you stand with that? Some people are very excited, obviously, but some people definitely are not. Where do you stand?
Well, if I were running the show, it wouldn't have happened, but I'm not running the show.
Understood.
And so there's not much I can do about it. I hope it will not result in vastly increased usage because this is dangerous stuff. It affects the brain. It leads to addictions, of higher addictions like cocaine and so on. So it's not without its risks, which are very real. And so the government, I think, is going to have its work cut out for it to make sure that any positive benefit, if there is some, so the kids don't go to jail for having a puff.
Right.
Is not offset by bad side effects, as they say. And we'll have to wait and see how it works out.
Understood. And before I let you go on, you had brought up Stephen Bassett, and he's been a guest here on the program before. I really like him. And he's someone who told me something very interesting about Bill Clinton, actually, way back when. And apparently he wanted to be the disclosure president, but they stonewalled him. And he was telling me how Hillary, if she would have been elected, she would have been the UFO disclosure president. And I've heard this echoed by more than one person, but I really don't see that actually happening. How can the government actually disclose something like that when we don't even know all the facts yet of what happened to JFK?
I think
right.
But the first person who briefed me was the Stephen Greer for 3 hours after I first went public, and he is very firm on this business of who knows what. And he briefed, this is something he told me like 12 years ago, that he briefed Bill Clinton right at the beginning about this. And Bill said, I will make this information public. Well, then after he became president, or the just as he was becoming president, he had a visit from a couple of people in the black suits, as they call it, and he never did it. And this is routine, that they visit the president and say, if you want to finish your term without risking an accident of some kind, you had better, well, to put it bluntly, take your orders from us. And that's the way the system has been working for decades.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right about that. I have to go on and say, I noticed a big difference when Bush left the office. It almost like he regained some life in him. The twinkle in his eye was back.
Yeah.
You noticed that too, right?
Well, I can't actually say that I noticed it, but I've seen enough politicians who, when they leave office, feel liberated, because I feel the same way myself.
Right.
What I'm saying to you tonight, I could not possibly have said. Let's say I had become prime minister, which I came very close to being twice. I couldn't then have told the truth the way I've been for the last 12 or 13 years.
And I really do admire that about you, the fact that you have been able to speak your mind and tell the truth about all sorts of things. It's very amazing, especially someone of your caliber, sir.
Well, the final thing, we're nearly running out of time here, I think, is the Fed has got to go. This is one of my favorite subjects, because they have been using money as a control mechanism. And what I have proposed there is that the Fed be nationalized right away, and that they start producing 34% of the new money every year for the use of the people who own the patent, theoretically. It was one of the biggest mistakes ever made, in one of my books at least, I call it the biggest heist in history. And there are two or three other things that I've said have to be done. And that is that the National Security Agency has to be shut down temporarily, so that they don't have all of this information as to who is on their side and who isn't, and where they are, and all this sort of thing. And the same with the Defense Advanced Research Projects, DARPA. And if anybody really wants to know what's going on in the world, they should read Alana Freeland's latest book. Now, I think the title of it is Under an Ionized Sky. If that doesn't depress you, nothing will, but it just yes. shows you how important these things are. And two more things. First, three more. The chemtrail HAARP thing, which is so destructive, they're dropping poison on our... They're poisoning the air we breathe and the water we drink and the soil we grow our crops in day after day after day, and have been for years, and nobody does anything about it. And it has to end, PDQ. And they have to ground Space Command, because it would be the sword, the thrust of a takeover, of a world takeover. They have to ground that until they can sort out who's going to represent Canada in space. And it should be a cooperative effort, as all of these things should be, and China and Russia should be involved, and we all should know exactly what's going on, and we don't. And finally, to do away with the automatic rifles, in deference to the young people who were so brave a year ago, and to let them know that their lives count too, and that they're not just children, kids. They're important people. They're the hope of the future. And finally, there has to be an amnesty and a committee set up between the House and the Senate to allow the people who want to talk without risking their lives and their futures. Because a lot of them would like to say what's going on and come out with some of this terrible stuff, but they don't dare do it because the cost would be too high.
Right.
So that's a short list of what has to be done. And in my book, I give reasons for those things. But it's not going to happen from the top down. It never will, because there are too many politicians who are compromised in one way or another. It's got to come from the bottom up, and it means that many, many millions of Americans have got to line up and say to their politicians, we want these things done. We want them done right away. And if we don't, if you don't do it, you will be toast in the next election. It doesn't matter what your party is. It doesn't matter how long you've served. It doesn't matter any of these things. This is important. This could be the difference between life and death. This could be the difference between a world of with offers of future for the young people and my grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and one where we're in effect slaves, which to some extent we are now through the monetary system. So it's all there, and I hope that some people will get a copy and you know, and sort of figure out what's going on, and then not only that, but then to do something about it.
Amazing. And I know we are coming to a close, but I did want to ask you just one more thing before I let you go. And that's one of the major breaking stories currently going on right now. Democrats were being targeted, and it's starting to remind me a little bit of the UK, how politics has become very dangerous. And it really doesn't matter what political side of the spectrum you are on. Sending explosive devices to anyone's home is just beyond evil.
You put it in the correct way.
Yeah.
It's beyond evil.
Beyond evil, and these people should be very lucky that this sort of package wasn't sent to them by Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah.
Understood, understood. I have to say, Paul, I had a great time talking to you, and I definitely hope that we could talk again in the near future. Definitely go ahead and leave us with any final words. The stage is yours, my friend.
Well, I just want to say there is hope, but only if millions of people start getting riled up and using their power of the ballot. And if they don't, well, we just had an election in Toronto where 41% of the people turned out. If there's that kind of lethargy, and if there's that kind of lack of interest in what's going on, I'm afraid it's game over. That's my would be my prediction. So the hope is conditional. It's possible. I'm an eternal optimist, or I wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. And I just hope that people will inform themselves and then say, yes, we want to save our planet, and we want to save our species, and we're willing to get off our Chesterfields and do something about it.
Amazing. Once again, thank you so much for being a part of the program, Paul. I hope you stay safe out there, and take care.
You too, and thanks a lot.
All right, good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye. And there he goes, ladies and gentlemen, Paul Hellyer, a great soul. If you are listening to this, keep in mind, you can listen every Saturday night at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, live on the TuneIn Radio app. Of course, I'll be live this Saturday night. Don't forget to be there. And if you enjoy this program and want to help fund the program, go to michaeldeacon.com. And on the right side end of the screen, hit the little donate button. Any amount would be amazing. I'm Michael Deacon. Thank you for listening. And with that said, the world is a mysterious place, and life itself is a mystery. Until next time, good night, everybody.
You mentioned the Illuminati, and we're not going to be on them, but the Illuminati certainly is part of the whole thing. But the top members of the Illuminati are Oprah Bush and Bill
Clinton. I could tell that all the mainstream media outlets were giving me, like, bullshit. Like, you can just see it. It's clear.
How appropriate. I wish I could be in that ring with Hogan right now.
It's crazy. It's the simplest shit. You go in there, you see the bartender, you got an info about it, you know, you talk to them. I'll bring you back, you talk to them. That's what I want.
Just for what it's worth, I want to put in my 2 cents to tell you both that you have one of the most incredibly well-rounded shows.
Introducing the greatest tag team on the radio.
Guess what, motherfuckers?
Successfully erased. Flawless victory.